Good evening, everyone. As some of you know, I'm moving back to Australia next year, around the middle of next year. And I've been reflecting on that the main things I'll be taking back with me are my body and my mind. Other than that, I'll have a couple of suitcases after 20 years in America with just robes and books and Buddhas, a few bells, and not much else. So it's really sort of awakened in me a sense of really wanting to train this body and this mind that I'm taking back. And I've been thinking of the mind as sort of what is inside the skull as sort of the starting place of training. That's the sort of particular bit of mind that each of us have, what's inside the skull, but also the mind that extends out beyond the skull, extends out in the 10 directions with no particular location. And similarly with the body, we start off with this particular body, which is with the skin around the edge of it. But the body that I'll be taking back will also be the body that extends in the 10 directions with no location. And I thought talking a little bit about mind and body training might be kind of beneficial in these somewhat uncertain times that we're in. Some of the ways that we train in our tradition are Zazen, studying the sutras, chanting, bowing, upholding the precepts, reflecting and contemplating, being in Sangha life, and Sangha being the sort of from this particular Sangha to the full expansive Sangha. And we train both our body and our mind through all of those different vehicles. And we use body and mind as two convenient ways of describing something that really isn't two things, but it is useful sometimes to describe them that way. And the training that we're doing isn't a training to get better at something or to add anything to ourselves. It's really a training of shedding our delusions and revealing our true nature. So it's a different type of training to what we often think of. It's not really a production process. It's more of a revealing. It's a revealing. And in that sense, we apply effort, but it's also a sort of effortless type of effort because it's not about construction of any sort. It really is about a revealing of our true nature and gaining a greater capacity to be present, just to be present in this reality and not be distracted, not be distracted as much. We need to be very gentle with ourselves in that regard. And that this type of training, we experience it subjectively in that we tend to just within our own personal experience, we tend to feel more at ease. We feel more gratitude, more empathy, we appreciate things, we see and engage with a sort of more clarity. So there's a lot of just immediate benefits to ourselves in our own experience. But there's also, of course, the benefit of how we engage with the rest of the world. How our training alters the way we engage with others. And a sort of a phrase I mentioned last time in this talk that's still been kind of rumbling around in my head a little is thinking of ourselves as a sort of a mind-altering or mood-altering substance. That everything we say and do is altering everything around us all the time. And just thinking about that sort of idea of seeing ourselves as a sort of a mind or mood altering substance, we know all of the more conventional forms of mood altering, like food, sleep, music, dance, drugs, alcohol, architecture, art, all of these different things. A mood altering, and everything that we're doing is altering the mood of things around us, altering the minds of things around us. It's kind of pretty awesome, really, to think of ourselves that way. And that this training that we're doing is so that when we're altering ourselves and altering others, that we're doing it hopefully in a way that actually is beneficial to them and to us. To all of us collectively. Recently, I've been running as part of the training of my body to take back to Australia, and noticing how the discipline involved in running is a little bit similar to the discipline in Zazen. So I just wanted to describe a little bit of the experiences I've been having with it. So initially I was just simply running, managing to put one foot in front of the other and was just happy enough to be able to do that. But as I've gained a little bit more fitness, I've become more attentive to how I'm running and sort of noticing parts of the body, such as when the ball of the foot hits the ground, the slight pressure in pushing off to the next step and paying attention to the ball of the foot as it hits the ground and pushes me forward rather than just sort of falling forward, you know. And then I started paying a little bit more attention to the heel of my foot as it lands on the ground, having it sort of land with some intention, not just happening to land because of gravity and nothing else. It just like hits the ground, but actually like landing my heel and then the energy transfers to the ball of the foot, which then becomes the push to the next movement. And another thing I've been doing is noticing like pulling up the core, like lengthening the body and feeling the core muscles activate. And so as I've been running, I notice that I can sustain paying attention like that for maybe 1 minute. And then just the sort of the effort of that attention becomes too much and my mind disperses and I just drift off somewhere and then I'm just running along in a plodding type of a fashion. And then I bring my mind back and think, oh, balls of the feet, heels of the feet, tighten the core, lift up through the spine and my speed picks up and I can do it again for maybe another minute or so. And then it becomes too tiring and my mind drifts again and the running becomes a little sloppier again. And I'm just noticing how similar that is to our Zazen practice, where we sit, we bring our attention to the breath or to whatever it is that we're contemplating, we sustain it for a certain amount of time, and then we just, without noticing, it's like that same moment when you fall asleep, you don't notice that moment. You don't notice the moment that we drift and our mind just sort of wanders off somewhere. And then we do that wonderful, gracious act of noticing we've drifted And then we come back and return again. And so I've also noticed with the running that it's getting a little easier to sustain that attention for a little longer. And even sometimes my form is actually a little bit better without me even trying. And that's that kind of naturalness that we cultivate in our Zen practice. We don't call it habit so much as natural. And I think that that's good because the word habit sounds a little absent-minded. We don't want to just have good habits. The word, I think, can sound a little absent-minded. But if we cultivate and train our body and our mind, we sort of it becomes natural. And that's, it's a wonderful feeling to feel just naturally fresh and alive in our bodies and in our minds. So this going back to this idea of our minds and our bodies being sort of mood altering substances that influence people, the perfect kind of arrangement is that with our skillfulness we have positive impacts on people. So a sort of positive mind training and body training is experienced by others and has a positive impact on them in terms of relieving their suffering. And I guess we would say that the most important gift that we can offer each other is to offer the gift of understanding the source of suffering, not just the relieving of suffering, but understanding the source of suffering. And I think this is the dynamic of positive leading to positive, if we put it that way, that we revere most. We think of the ancestors and how incredibly generous they were in sharing with us and altering us through their training translates into our being able to train as well. So it's a positive to positive. Think of all the wonderful ancestors of the past and also the great teachers of the present and how we hold them in such high regard because of that capacity just by their body and their minds we're transformed. But all of us too, I think, can in very simple little ways do the same thing in the simple ways that we relate to people at work or to strangers. Something I really enjoy doing is when there's someone that's sort of fixing I don't know if they're telephone cables or Verizon cables or PG&A cables, whatever the cables are that you see workers working on or road workers, it's just so nice to walk past them and say, thank you so much for your service, you know. And they sometimes sort of smile unexpectedly and go, oh, you're welcome, you know. Little ways that we can do that positive leading to positive in others. But sometimes, even when we're skillful, the positive that we do sometimes actually translates as a negative for somebody. It just doesn't actually work sometimes, which I think can be a little sad and disappointing. And I thought of an example of this when I first decided to start running in this area called the Ohlone Bluff Trail. It's about a 6-mile loop just north of Wilder Ranch. And when I looked on Google Maps, I imagined, just looking at the map, that there would be this beautiful coastline and then all the sort of coastal shrubs and bushes and sort of grasses. It's just the vision I had in my head. And then when I got out there, it was just Brussels sprout fields, like miles of them, just miles and miles of Brussels sprout fields. And I felt this sort of disappointment when I looked at them, like, oh, this is not what I expected. Now, those Brussels sprouts were really skillfully being themselves. They were in their Dharma position, doing their job, being Brussels sprouts, producing food for humans. They were healthy and vigorous. So they were like mindfully, skillfully transmitting the Dharma to me. And my response was, oh God, they're just Brussels sprouts. You know, so that was an example of how even when we or others are extremely skillful, sometimes it's just not received. So I just couldn't receive the teachings from the Brussels sprouts initially. But of course, our training is our training. So then I found myself going, well, yeah, they're kind of nice. And then over the days and over the weeks, I've just come to love these Brussels sprouts. I get to see different fields grow. They plant, you know, they're planted a number of weeks after each other so that they harvest one as the next lot comes on and it moves down the line. And I watch the workers and the machines and the crows and the seagulls. And I just totally love those Brussels sprouts now. And today I was just very lucky that a truck drove past full of Brussels sprouts and a whole bunch of them just bounced off the side of the truck onto the road just near where I finished my run. So I just like scooped up a whole lot in my little running outfit and brought them home. So that was a nice treat. So it's good for us to know that sometimes even when we do our best, it won't be well received. Then, of course, if we happen to have a lapse in our training and we're not very skillful, that might lead to doing harm to others. And I think all of us could think of lots of different examples of harm intentionally or inadvertently being done to others. But I also like to think with that in the bigger picture, there's far, far, far more people inadvertently and accidentally doing good and that being received by others in a positive way. I think we can sometimes get a little saddened by the media because it tends to focus on a lot of these negatives. So I think it's important for us to keep remembering that all day, every day, all around the world, people are caring for their children and making food and being decent and obeying road rules and working in shops and so on and so forth. And animals are feeding their babies. There's just mostly good going to good. And then another thing that can sometimes happen is an unskillful event can lead to actually positive growth for some people. And some of us, I think, have had those experiences where something very unpleasant has happened to us. And yet it has pushed us in a certain kind of way to shed some sort of delusion that we were clinging to. And that very unpleasant event was just the perfect event to allow us to shed something. So it's good to keep an eye out for those moments where we can let painful, difficult things actually transform us for the better. And then as our training gets more maybe subtle, you could say, over time, I think we need to be a little more precise in our training. And I noticed this with running. Initially, I was just running. And I lost maybe 25 pounds, but now I'm kind of wanting to get fit, as in running fit. And that's a different level of fitness to get that sort of fit. And I can't do that one by myself. That's getting more subtle. That's getting more difficult. And so I have to use some apps on my phone. I need an app for my calories in and calories out. And then I need an app that tells me how fast I'm running, how far, and what my pace is, because I can't trust my subjective experience. I can't trust it. When it gets subtle, it just gets too hard, and I can't trust my own judgment. And I think this is similar to us with our Dharma practice. as we more mature into our practice, it becomes more subtle, and we need a teacher because we can't trust our subjective experience. We can't trust necessarily that our practice, the training that we're doing, is enough. We need to, just like I plug that data into those apps, in a way we need to give the data to the teacher and let the teacher sort of reflect back to us from their position how we're doing. And something just about running too, that it's just an okay thing, but it's nothing like Zazen. The thing that's so amazing about Zazen is any kind of body can do Zazen. Just any kind of body can do it. And almost any kind of mind can do it. So Zazen is something that can be done by anyone in any location at any time. I don't know that there's many other things that are so adaptable and so precious and can be done anywhere by anyone at any time. It's kind of extraordinary. So I'm very aware that as much as I'm loving running, one significant injury and it's gone. It's done. Won't be happening anymore. Whereas Zazen, doesn't matter what injury, doesn't matter what illness, doesn't matter whether you're disciplined or undisciplined or smart or dull, you can still do it. So it's pretty special. And another thought I was having too is that no matter how fast you run, you can't outrun the present. You can't outrun now, you know? And no matter how slow we run, we're never lagging behind now. We're never not caught up to now. We're always in now. No matter what we do, we're always in now. And that led me to think of the story of Angulimala, whose name means garland of fingers because of his terrible history. But there's a part of the story where Shakyamuni Buddha is walking, and he's just walking calmly, and Angulimala is running to catch up. And no matter how fast he runs, he can't catch up. And that's because there's a difference in what the two of them are doing. Shakyamuni Buddha is walking in the present. He's walking in awareness. Whereas Angulimala is trying to run into the future. He's trying to run away from the past and into the future, and he's not being present. And so he's running and running, but he can't catch up. And so he shouts out to the Buddha, "Stop, stop." And Buddha stops and turns and says, "I have stopped. It's you who have not stopped." And in that moment, Angulimala suddenly stops, you know, and falls to his knees and becomes a disciple of the Buddha. And so, like I alluded a little bit at the beginning, we can do this training of our body and our minds because we maybe are in unprecedented times and things are a little less certain. And what used to be taken for granted, we can't take for granted anymore. Climate is changing, and we need as many steady, strong, kind minds as we can cultivate. As we can cultivate just in within ourselves individually, and that we can help inspire in others. We really need as many, many people as possible to steady the boat for the time ahead of us. I wanted to finish with just a couple of quotes. This is a koan from the miscellaneous collection of the Harada Yasutani and Diamond Sangha traditions, case 21. "There is someone who can plunge into the sea and count all the sands. How is it that this person is sitting on top of a needle? When I think of that in relation to mind training, that sitting on top of the needle is just our clear present state of mind in whatever we are doing. Wherever we are, whatever we are doing, moment to moment, being present and attentive in a natural kind of way, not in an effortful kind of way, without aversion, without disagreement, with a certain kind of joy and acceptance of the present moment. That's the precision of sitting on top of the needle. And when we have that, the whole world opens up to us. Then we can plunge down to the depths and count the sands. And a quote from Dogen in Fukan Zazenji: "The storehouse of treasures opens of itself. You may take them and use them any way you wish." And I think that is very beautiful, just in it's so open and relaxed. The storehouse of treasures opens of itself. You may take them and use them any way you wish. And I think we can trust that the way we would wish to use the storehouse of treasures really is just for the benefit of all beings. We don't have any other wish than that. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it.